Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Steve O'Keefe, and I am the Executive Director of the Telework Exchange. For those of you that have problems understanding me, and people do sometimes, I was delighted to see we have a sign language interpreter here. Today, the newspapers are full of information about the stimulus package. And we're here today to talk about a stimulus package of our own, encouraging telework in the federal government, which of course will drive greater energy efficiency, increased productivity, better work-life balance. Many of the issues that the stimulus package is designed to support changes in our society. And the great thing is that telework is not going to cost trillions of dollars. So we're excited to be here this morning on behalf of the entire team at the Telework Exchange. Thank you for being here this morning. Our goal is to discuss the opportunity for the federal government in telework, as well, of course, as to share best practices from early adopter agencies. We're delighted to have so many people from the federal government with us, and of course, our distinguished panelists from both industry and government to talk about successes to date and also challenges that they have overcome. We would first like to acknowledge Adobe for sponsoring this Telework in a Box event series. In addition to the event today in DC, Adobe and Telework Exchange will host three regional events across America in Atlanta, Denver, and San Francisco. Yes, it is time for telework to make a move outside the Beltway. We've had a lot of interest from agencies outside of Washington, D.C. There are a lot of federal employees outside of D.C., as well as state and local government employees who are interested in engaging in telework. Many of them have had tremendous successes in telework, and so we're excited to work with Adobe to take this program outside the Beltway, get on the road. Additional information on the upcoming events, the Telework in a Box series, is available at our website, telworkexchange.com/telework-in-a-box. And you can also contact Aaron Lundberg, whose information is at the bottom of your schedule if you're interested in learning more. Throughout the day, we recommend that you visit the Adobe and Telework Exchange tables in the back to learn more about how you can get involved in these public-private interactions. And please feel free to check out our website, telworkexchange.com, for upcoming programs, events, and initiatives. Thanks again to Adobe for making this continuing education event possible. Before we introduce our first panel this morning, I would like to take a moment to provide a brief overview of where telework currently stands in the federal arena. The new administration is clear on where it stands on telework. I think we can all agree that telework is gaining significant momentum. Parties that have not focused on telework in the past, who have shunned the issue, are now taking notice. And I think the crowd here today is testament to how hot telework is inside the Beltway and across America. Right from the top, President Obama has already publicly supported telework. In a series of October letters written to John Gage, National President of the American Federation of Government Employees, then President-elect Barack Obama claimed that he would, and I quote, support efforts to bring paid family leave, flexible work schedules, and increased teleworking to the federal government. In addition, President Obama recently formed the Middle Class Task Force, chaired by Vice President Biden, to raise the living standards of middle class working families in America, including improving work-life balance for families. And that clearly starts at home with federal employees. The government needs to lead by example. And this month, the president signed the economic stimulus bill into law. Included in the bill is a package valued at $7 billion to expand broadband in rural areas, which will inevitably enable better and more productive telework. With President Obama's transition already in place, telework exchanges in the process of following up with existing and newly elected key stakeholders to advance telework programs in 2009 and beyond. Let's take a quick look at the legislative side. We've been working closely with Representative John Sarbanes' office. He plans to reintroduce the Telework Improvement Act of 2008, or last year this was known as H.R. 4106, this spring. This brings additional emphasis on agencies to allocate resources to expand existing telework programs and grow new ones. Telework Exchange recently had the opportunity to review S-1000, which was the Senate bill, and H.R. 4106, and we are meeting with various representatives on the Hill to see these bills are strengthened before they are reintroduced. Key telework stakeholders on the Hill include Representative Sarbanes, Representative Davis, Representative Connolly, Representative Waxman, Representative Blumenauer, and Senators Warner and Voinovich, to name just a few. And I think we can expect significant interest from Mark Warner, who, as you know, started his career in the telecommunications field and is a very progressive thinker. So given the state of telework today, Telework Exchange is continuing to collaborate with both industry and government to ensure telework is at the forefront of the agenda. Telework is a viable solution to many of the critical challenges facing our government. In fact, our partners at Intel are launching a new metro advertising campaign in the coming weeks that champions telework, and I would point you to look out for it on the metro. The goal is to reach out to regular federal employees, just like you, to underline the benefits of telework in order to get our civil servants to speak to their managers about telework and get federal managers on the bus, or the train, as the case may be. Let me throw out a few issues that telework addresses which are close to your heart. Recruiting, making the federal government the number one employer of choice. BRAC, the Base Realignment and Closure Act. The economic downturn, making jobs available in rural areas, and working smarter and being more efficient in the workplace. Continuity of operations, or COOPET as it is known. The retirement tsunami, environmental concerns. And, of course, strengthening American families and promoting greater work-life balance. Telework Exchange is focused on ensuring that telework has a seat at the table, wherever that table may be. Our president, Barack Obama, is clearly a mobile worker. I think everybody's read about his BlackBerry escapades. And clearly our president himself is a teleworker. He teleworks almost every day from the Oval Office. So if the president is teleworking, why shouldn't we? And at the Telework Exchange, we are committed to providing a community to discuss telework hot topics, challenges, technology solutions, and helping our government and our agencies promote telework and move the ball forward. To that end, we continue to host our semi-annual town hall meetings. The Telework Exchange will host the next town hall meeting on April 8th, at the Ronald Reagan Building. This is the Telework Exchange's fifth town hall meeting, and we have a stellar lineup of speakers. The event is titled Invest in Your Telework Program, Focus on Dollars and Cents, and we'll look at how to utilize existing resources to build a telework program, as well as how agencies are establishing and expanding telework programs within the federal government. Last week, we announced our keynote speakers, Max Steer, President and CEO of the Partnership for Public Service, and Vice Admiral Mark Ferguson, Chief of Naval Personnel, Deputy Chief of Naval Operations with the U.S. Navy. We have a terrific lineup of sponsors and affiliates participating in the event, including Adobe and the General Services Administration, which has been a strong backer of the Telework Exchange. I think this is just another example of the value and power of public-private partnership in order to move the ball forward. We encourage you all to take advantage of the early bird registration. If you register before March the 3rd, there is a discount. Telework Exchange would also like to encourage all of you to submit nominations for our fourth annual Television Awards Program. The Television Awards Program recognizes excellence in government telework programs and your accomplishments in the categories listed here on the screen. Nomination forms are available on our website and are due by March the 13th. The winners will be announced at a breakfast awards ceremony at the City Club in D.C. on June the 2nd, and we invite all of you to join us for that award ceremony. You will find the most recent edition of the Teleworker, the Telework Exchanges magazine, on tables at the back. We have the next issue available in the next couple of weeks. If you're interested in receiving copies to pass on inside your organization, please send an email to info@teleworkexchange.com. We've spent many years learning from federal employees and agencies about telework successes and challenges. We will continue these efforts today, listening and learning from leading government and industry experts on the topics of government management and telework. How do we support and evaluate teleworking employees? How do we train managers to supervise in remote environments? How can we, as managers, foster better peer-to-peer collaboration? Our panel of telework gurus will answer these questions and more as we discuss how to manage by results and meet business and mission objectives in a telework environment. With that said, we have an exciting event planned for the day, and it is my honor to introduce Rob Pinkerton, who will moderate our first panel entitled The Government Manager and Telework, Learning from Early Adopters. Good morning, Rob. Rob is the Director of Government Solutions for Adobe Systems, where he is responsible for Adobe's enterprise go-to-market and solutions development strategies. Rob is a true industry expert with 18 years of experience in both government and technology, working in county, city, state, and federal levels of government. Rob also worked as an emergency medical response technician in Virginia, and prior to that, as a law clerk in the city of Baltimore, and as legislative counsel in the United States Senate during the 104th and 106th Congress. So he has truly walked a mile or two in your shoes. We are excited to have Rob with us today. Please join me in welcoming Rob Pinkerton of Adobe, who will introduce the Session 1 panelist.
Good morning. Thanks for joining today, and Stephen, thank you for that gracious introduction and for this event. This has been very, very well done, very professionally done. I appreciate all the preparation you all have put into it. Thank you. In listening to Stephen's kind of laundry list of the benefits of teleworking, I think the one he left off, which is the one I think about every morning, and particularly this morning sitting on the Roosevelt Bridge, not moving, is maybe we can unclog some of the traffic around here. We have a great panel today. We have obviously a full house and a great topic, so let's dive in. The way that we're going to proceed for the next hour is I'm going to give a quick introduction to our panelists. I'm going to ask each of them to give a brief overview of what they are working on, what their experience, kind of their thoughts on this subject, and then we're going to have questions. And I've got some questions to ask, but I've done about five or six of these type panels in the past year, and I assure you they are the most interesting and informative if you all get involved. And we'll have microphones in the audience, and just don't be shy. I'll be scanning the crowd looking for questions, and as many as you want, we will get them done before 10 o'clock. Okay, so our panelists. So first, I'm going to work down the line on my right. We have Danette Campbell, who is a senior advisor for telework at USPTO, and she's responsible for developing and implementing comprehensive telework and hoteling programs for agency employees in order to address productivity, employee retention, space management issues. She has previous tenures at the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments, Mid-Atlantic Telework Exchange, and she's testified before Congress as well as spoken to European Patent Office and Japan Unisys Users Association on this subject. Welcome, Danette.
Thank you.
Next to Danette, we have Joseph Hungate, who is the Principal Deputy Inspector General for Treasury Inspector General Tax Administration, TIGTA. He previously served as the Bureau's chief, the CFO and the CIO, and contributions recognized with the Presidential Rank Award for Meritorious Executive in 2007. He's also had 10 years at the CDC and National Institutes of Standards and Technology. Welcome. And finally, at the end, we have Randy Cook, who is Director of Customer Service for TIGTA. Ms. Cook has been with the with Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration since its inception in 1999. Before that, with as an internal auditor for the IRS Inspection Service and a tax auditor with the Examination Office. She has also been telecommuting full-time since 2001. Sounds pretty good. So with that, welcome. Thank you so much for being here. And Danette, if I could ask you to kind of just give a quick overview.
Happy to.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for inviting me to speak this morning. You know, the United States Patent and Trademark Office started its telework initiative over 10 years ago with 18 trademark examining attorneys. Today, more than 4,000 employees agency-wide are working from home at least one day a week, and over 1,700 of these work from home 4 days a week. The agency is considered a model for telework in the federal government and has secured numerous awards for its exemplary telework programs. Our telework programs are carefully designed to include IT and non-IT training, pre, mid, and post-pilot surveys, focus groups, and final reports. Because of this strategic design, USPTO has become the go-to agency for other federal agencies interested in starting or expanding their telework initiatives. As the agency hires new employees, it's anticipated that the USPTO telework programs will remain at the vanguard of federal telework. We will continue to strive to be an employer of choice and remain committed to supporting telework agency-wide by encouraging employee participation and ensuring that remote workers have the tools they need to be successful. Telework at the agency provides for space and related cost savings, increases our workforce without increasing real estate costs, incorporates comprehensive training programs, provides for continuity of operations planning, offers hoteling programs for trademarks and patents employees, is not a one-size-fits-all initiative, and positions our agency as an employer of choice. Again, thanks so much. Joe, I'm going to turn this over to you.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. TIGTA, the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. Whether you've encountered an IG or not, you know, having an IG is a good thing, but Treasury, by the grace of God, has been bestowed with three Inspector Generals now. The regular one for the Department of Law Offices, ourselves for Tax Administration, which effectively means we oversight the IRS, and then the recent one, Special IG for the Troubled Asset Relief Program. So we're flush with IGs at Treasury. Our inception was in 1999, and Randy's was right there at the forefront of this. And the individual that started the agency was a very traditional individual and resistant even to alternate work schedules. He says, we can't let people come in before 8 o'clock because they'll just sit at their desk and read the paper and eat breakfast, which gave us quite a monumental task at that stage, is just to change the mind and convince him that, you know, and I can't recall the attribution, work isn't where you do it, it's what you do, that it's meaningful to engage the employees in a discussion about this. So he went ahead and said, okay, let's have a task force, Office of the Future. And he put some executives on it as well, and the report came back. Well, the Office of the Future isn't an office at all. It's wherever you are, and you can work productively. And so from the not letting people even work, you know, alternate work schedules to this suggestion that they don't even have to come to work, he actually got on board. So I have to say the main point you need to do to get the programs out there is executive support. And then from that, the communication, all that. We started with a pilot. Randy was fortunate to pilot. It was so successful, we ended it early. And they said, well, can we still telework, please? So we allowed them to do that. We rolled it out organization-wide very quickly after that. We're 900, just under 900 people in 70 different posted duties across the country. So we have, you know, quite a wide presence, and telework really allows much better collaboration among our people. What really helps make it work is we're outcome-oriented, much like the Patent Trademark Office. There's, you know, definitive work product there. So between our audits and investigations, it's very easy to have those built-in measures to see how well you're doing. One thing that we've discovered as we went down this path is the three major wins here is one is the employee morale. We're routinely recognized with others as one or two in the work-life balance area. In a recent human capital survey by OPM, 58% of our employees indicate that the ability to telework is a major reason they remain with the agency. It's just our job satisfaction is very high, and we have a 92% rating of the people cooperate to get things done. And then productivity, although we're barred by federal law to differentiate between in-office and teleworkers, we anecdotally, by just gauging the concentration of telework in the various office, see a slightly higher productivity gain in those offices across the country that telework to a greater extent than those that don't. So we feel we've demonstrated, at least anecdotally, a productivity gain. And then important to any and every executive is the budget. We have harvested real dollars, as Danette indicated. We don't have as much space as we would in a traditional office space environment. We've calculated it's close to $1 million annually we save because of our telework program. And then the recognition that comes with being out front and doing well. And as we move forward, it was the culture was initially what we had to overcome, and we did that through communication. And I think Randy has some techniques that were employed and such. So, Randy?
Yes, I'm I'm a director of customer service in Atlanta, and what that means is for the IRS, whenever you pick up the phone and talk to an assister, walk into a walk-in office and get a return done or a tax law question answered, or you have a return prepared by the IRS, my auditors, of which are about 21 to 25, oversee that. So they don't just have an office. They sit in their telecommuting home office and are being able to oversee the customer service of the Internal Revenue Service. I have about 21 to 25 auditors. They're in two offices. All three of my managers are in Atlanta, Georgia. I have three teams in Atlanta and half a team in Andover, Massachusetts. I also have an office assistant because in Atlanta we have two main telecommuting offices in which the auditors do come into the office one day a week. That is TIGTA policy. We all get together and decide what office and where, since we have more than one in Atlanta, we want to meet, and we meet one day a week. Out of the 21 auditors, I have three managers that oversee three teams of auditors, and I oversee anywhere from 5 to 10 audits a year. So as Joe mentioned, we are process-oriented. We have products that we deliver at the end of the year, and the managers and I are cognizant of that. However, we don't manufacture widgets. The auditors that work at their desk every day work on paper assignments, and so they don't have something at the end of the day to show a manager. We are outcome performance results measures, and the auditors view the telecommuting as a privilege. All of my auditors except one telecommute. The one has 8 children and chooses not to stay at home with the children. So he does choose to come into the office. We also have a few others. We have one that doesn't telecommute because he has foster bunnies. The bunnies chew wires. So he doesn't want the bunnies working with him and chewing the wires. So he leaves the home every day and leaves his, I think he's up to about 27 bunnies in the home at the moment. So there are reasons not to telecommute, but my 21 or so auditors that do telecommute, telecommute the 4 days a week and love it. In fact, I have several senior auditors that have turned down promotions with the Internal Revenue Service because they would lose that telecommuting ability. They enjoy it. They see it as a privilege. And I think that's one reason our productivity is up, not only because they're enjoying their job, but they realize it's a privilege to work in the home.
Thank you. I'm going to start with some questions, but again, please, you know, if you have them, raise your hand. Now, it's been about 10 years, I guess, since I worked in government, and I realize a lot's changed since then. But I'm still, it's hard for me to imagine the flexibility to allow this. I'll characterize it, which I think I have an extreme example. But when I worked in the U.S. Senate, the senator I worked for had a 9 a.m. attendance check. Every morning, the office manager would call around to make sure everyone was sitting in their desks for the day. He was ex-military, and he didn't care who you were. You know, if you were a college intern or a retired colonel working for him on committee, he was going to see you that day if you weren't in your desk at 9 a.m. and you had to explain yourself, you know, why you weren't there. And you know, created some interesting images with those retired colonels standing in front of the senator with the hungover college kid who had a very different reason for being late. I realize that's an extreme, but that is emblematic of some of the culture, you know, still in government. And I can't imagine going to my manager and saying, "I want to work from home. I don't want to go into the office." And I'm curious, you know, just how do you, recommend that people approach, you know, management to get buy-in? I mean, people, I think, struggle with this, and what can they do to overcome that? So can we start with you, Jeanette?
You know, I think agency executives are just as concerned with bottom line as our private sector organizations. And my suggestion to telework coordinators or managers who are interested in starting a telework initiative is to present their executives with a return on investment model and include the real estate cost avoidance, to include parking and transportation cost, increased production if that's applicable to your business unit, speak to reduced sick leave usage, speak to the costs associated with recruitment and retention, and emphasize that telework really is critical for a substantial COOP program. And finally, and we're all on the same page insofar as the management by results piece of this. And quite frankly, that should be taking place in the bricks and mortar environment, not just in a virtual environment. Joe?
Yeah, echo all those points. One thing early adopters faced was the security question. That really has been solved now with the disk encryptions, the very well encrypted virtual private networks. But that needs to be addressed because many executives have been concerned about getting the name of the Washington Post because one of the employees leaked sensitive data or PII. And we never went down the path thinking, you know, this is a great COOP tool. We were going down thinking it's a great telework, it's a great employee thing. And then September 11th occurred, and we realized then we had an excellent COOP plan in place without even knowing it. So we just got people to take laptops home and run with that. And then there's just the employee benefit aspect. Just anecdotally, as I was in Chicago and saw one of our long-term employees, and she wasn't wearing glasses, so I said, "Well, you sort of decided to take the step and get the LASIK." She says, "No, I don't have to commute an hour and a half each way every day. In the absence of that stress, my eyesight has improved." So I don't have to wear glasses. I don't have to wear contacts anymore. So, you know, I will never leave, you know, TICTA because it's just I get a chance to do the job I love. She's in IT, and I don't have the stress of getting to and from work if I were to leave and get big bucks in the private sector. So that's you know, one of the things that's a real good story there.
I think a couple of the things that TICTA did very well when they were implementing was that they did provide all the managers training on how to train in a virtual office. It was over the Internet. We're now going into over the Internet, and they're trying to force us to have the webcast stuff, and they've got these little cameras on our phones, but so far are on our computers. We haven't been using that too much. But what TIGDA does provide for us is they provide that we all have to have a DSL line or a hard or a cable line. They provide us a printer. They provide us a phone if you want one. Only about half of my auditors choose to have TIGDA pay for a phone. The other half just use their personal phone. However, one of the things I do require is that when the phone rings, you're to answer it TIGDA. I don't want the IRS or someone calling one of my employees who just says hello. So if you have a personal line during business hours, they answer the phone TIGDA in their name, just as you would it in a real office. They pay for half of our DSL, and as I said, they provide us the printer, now the little webcam. I will reiterate the sick leave. Sick leave is down considerably and always is very, very minimal. TIGDA is very family-friendly. We are allowed alternate work schedules anywhere, the 549, 4-8s. I have employees that come in at 6 in the morning. I have employees that get their children off to work or start at 5 or 5:30 in the morning, get their children off to work, and then come back. All of my managers treat communications differently. Some of them are a lot like Rob's boss. They want to know you're there, so when they sign on in the morning, they ask that you email and say, here, I'm working, I'm starting work. Whenever you leave to go to lunch, they ask that you email to go to lunch. One reason they ask that, though, is because we have so many different work schedules, so that they want to know when you're back at your desk, because you might have just gotten your kids off. We do have a policy that you do not babysit. So if you have a child at home that's under a certain age, we do expect you to have a nanny or a sitter. We also have the policy where every year we sign a policy stating that we will abide to TIGDA's rules. One of the things I emphasized to my staff when we started telecommuting was to really make you have a home office. I believe, Joe, don't we have to have an office? We can't just use part of our dining room. You have to have an office that meets OSHA requirements. And I asked them to go on and please get the office in a comfortable, because you will be more comfortable if you have the right chairs, you have all the office equipment that you need, the staplers, the pins. We also provide, because we use so much sensitive information, we provide our employees a locked cabinet at home so that they can lock up some of their working papers, which would you'd not, just like we would in a normal office, should always be behind lock and key.
Okay. A lot of good ideas here, I think. And Danette, I think your fiscal responsibility path might have worked with my old boss, actually. saying taxpayer dollars is probably a compelling. We have a question down here? We have a microphone coming up, too, if you don't mind, so other folks can hear.
Do you all make site visits to make sure that the people, offices, meet the OSHA requirements?
We do have that indicated in our enterprise-wide telework policy, that in the event that the agency needs to go to an employee's home for whatever reason, we will give them 48 hours notification prior to going on site. To date, to my knowledge, in the 3 years that I have been at the agency, that has not occurred.
Have another question.
To follow up, we just have self-certification. As you just self-certify that your office environment meets OSHA requirements, and we don't inspect. But if something were to happen, then you'd better have lived up to your agreement.
Exactly.
Because my follow-up question is, how would you handle if someone were to injure themselves in their office during working hours?
Well, that might be a good opportunity then for, you know, a representative from the agency to go to the individual's work site. But again, we self-certify as well. There's a very extensive safety checklist. At that point, it's handled as a workers' compensation claim, just as if an accident or something had happened at the Alexandria campus.
Okay, so let's follow that line of question, because it's interesting. You know, I mean, obviously in government we're all about oversight. So if we go forward with teleworking, I've heard, you know, a couple ways to measure it. So we had improved eyesight in one circumstance, reduced sick leave. Are there other considerations or techniques for evaluating the success of telework programs that people should consider?
Well, again, you know, at our agency, it's very easy to measure production because we are, from a patent and trademark perspective, we are a production shop. Mm-hmm. And so our patent examiners and trademark examining attorneys know in every two-week period exactly how much needs to be produced. So when we do studies, and believe me, at the agency, we measure everything. And so when we kick off these pilot programs, as I said earlier, you know, we do the pre, the mid, the post-pilot surveys. We conduct focus sessions. We measure the production from the folks that have been deployed to telework versus those who are still on campus. And that is documented. There is actually about a 10% increase in production from those folks who are working from home. So, yes, it's very interesting, and we default to that that mechanism, that measurement tool, all the time, even in corporate business units, to ensure that our telework programs are spot on and that, you know, the bottom line from the agency is being served. Joe?
Thank you. We do much the same aspects. We do monthly performance reporting, investigations, audits. We try not to count widgets, I think, as far as an audit is not a widget. It's what's the impact of that audit? And we can catalog that aspect. What's the impact of an investigation? Funds put to better use, revenue protected, any number of aspects. So we routinely capture all those performance measures, and then we can overlay it against sort of the concentration of telework and anecdotally demonstrate increased productivity. We haven't decided. We have a lot of auditors, so they're not willing to put a number on that yet because they can't empirically prove it. But I could sort of agree with your 10% number. And then also through surveys, get the feedback from the employees on that aspect. And part of that is, you know, quarterly, I guess we ask them to update what your telework is. You can do periodic, which is every now and then you take a day out of the office to do performance appraisals or something, or limited, which is 1 or 2 days, and then full, which is, you know, three or more. We have 95% of our employees are teleworking at least 1 day a month, and 40% are out of the office, are in their telework office at home or on the road, at least 40% of the employee population for three or more days.
As far as the auditors go, as I said, I have three managers, and how they manage their audit teams in a virtual office, I would hope is the same way they would manage those auditors in a brick-and-mortar office. They literally manage by results. I've been to a lot of training and conferences in the last 2 or 3 years when telecommunities come up, and I've had people in the audience raise questions about, well, if I can't see them, how do I know they're doing the work? And that was, I think, a lot of the older managers that, not necessarily age, but that had managed quite a long time, had that kind of feeling, if I can't see them, I don't know that they're working. However, once in the environment, these managers realize we have a phone, you have email, and I don't know how many of y'all realize email's taken over our lives, and that's how we do communicate. So whether you're, I've seen people email the cubicle next to them when we're sitting in the office. So whether you're emailing from 2,000 miles away or from the cubicle, that seems to be the way we're communicating nowadays. So I think that communication gives that manager the comfort level. I mean, a lot of us have the chat. We have telephones. I notice it more and more that we're using the emails, like I said, and not the telephone or yelling over the cubicles. So how the manager manages each one of their teams, which range from anywhere from 6 to 10 people or 2 to 3 projects at a time, is just like they would manage, I would hope, in the office. How are your assignments assigned? Each manager assigns their assignments differently. Each test you do, all the work we do is different. So it's what do you have done at the end of the week, and whether they manage by daily assignments, weekly assignments, or monthly assignments, whether your employee is a brand new employee who has been around 20 years, you're managing that employee based on their skills, how quickly they work, what test it is, just as you would in a regular office.
Interesting. Okay. Was there a question in the back? Or we have two, actually, so let's start back here.
Hi, thanks for coming. I had a question about sort of your middle managers, the three you mentioned. So if you have this groundswell of people wanting to telework and the executives say, okay, let's start a program, but now you've left the middle managers, the people, you know, the direct supervisors in the lurch. They have no idea how to handle this. So can you describe, I guess, a little bit more in detail what kind of training you provide? Because I've found that the online can be too generic and they don't really have, you know, enough detail to really understand what's expected of them as managers of a teleworker.
No, go ahead.
Yeah. One of the things that I want to point out and emphasize, I think I said it earlier, we train every single employee through non-IT training, which is, it sounds like what you're referring to, and IT training before that employee is deployed to work from home. In addition, we train their managers, and we focus on communication, building effective teams, coaching their employees for growth and success, how to focus on results, how to manage by results. We call these trainings for managers, we refer to them as facilitated discussions. And while we have a very controlled, if you will, agenda and materials, we have a lot of discussion between the managers about the deployment of these teleworkers and what they can expect. You know, I think some managers hear that your employees are going to be working from home and they think that they're never going to see them again. And we have to sort of act as a counselor and explain to them that, yes, in fact, they're only working remotely one day a week. Here are some tools to help you stay in constant communication with those employees. We incorporate the Nortel MCS, which is the multimedia customer service or client server there at the office. That incorporates a voice over IP. So if the employee's line rings when they're at the Alexandria campus with voice over IP, it goes right through the computer and it rings at their home. So it's seamless. We also, with the MCS, utilize instant messaging, another great way to stay in touch. A lot of our teleworkers have created chat rooms and work in teams that much easier when they're working remotely because of the Nortel product. But all of those things are addressed in these trainings. And quite frankly, I think what telework does, and I think why many managers are fearful, telework really will highlight or spotlight management. And if an individual has some management issues, they will be spotlighted when your employees are working remotely. A manager has to make the effort to stay connected with the employees. And I think that is, in fact, a critical piece. There's several ways that our managers at the agency communicate and stay connected with their employees. One of the things that I suggest in our corporate business unit, and that would be CAO, CFO, OCIO, External Affairs, Human Resources, and especially for those folks who have never worked remotely or folks who have never managed remote workers, is that they... the teleworker perhaps send a very brief email in the morning. I think Randy mentioned this. Just a reminder that I'm working from home today. Will be available between 8:30 and 4:30, taking a lunch at 11:30. If I need to step away from my workstation, we'll send you an IM. And most of our managers are very comfortable with that. So that's one of the ways that we help them manage these remote workers. Again, training for managers is as critical as it is for your teleworking employees.
We had a similar problem early that you suggested the online, computer-based training just wasn't getting there. We have the module for the manager, the module for the employee, and the head of the agency says, well, my numbers aren't going up of teleworkers. So we convened an all-managers meeting and brought everybody from across the country into a central site, hired a contractor to do training to teach the managers how to manage in a virtual environment, and just imbued it in our culture. We've had exceptionally low turnover, so we've kept that cultural aspect in, and so it appears now that sort of the online training is sufficient. But the real key to success is we put it in their performance appraisals.
I'm not sure I can add anything other than what I've just said. Managing in a virtual environment, I don't believe, after your initial shock, is any different than managing within a brick and mortar. It's a different way of communicating, but again, if you're emailing the cubicle next door, what's the difference of emailing across the country? I think each manager has to develop his or her own way of communicating, making assignments, how often you're going to communicate. I constantly have an issue when I first started I call Mary Jo and she didn't answer the phone. Well, how long do you give Mary Jo to answer the phone? You know, is it instantly? You know, I have someone that calls and says, Randy, I couldn't get hold of you. And I said, well, you know, I'm allowed bathroom breaks even at home. So you do have to use common sense as well. Just because we're at home, don't be nervous that we're not answering the phone. And you all have to work that out. And I think it's a comfort level once you see that your employees are doing their work, and in the experience that TIGDA's had, they're doing it faster. We are certainly taking less leave. I find the worst thing my employees do is they work more than their 8 hours a day. It is very, very difficult at the end of the day. I have 2 four-legged children at home. If I were in an office at 3 o'clock, I would be out. At home, my children are there all day long. I'm not worried about having to get home and let them out. I can work 10 or 12 hours a day and not realize the day is gone. Rarely do any of my employees take their regular lunch. They're working through lunch. They go downstairs, they get a sandwich, and they sit down and work. So it's not, am I not working enough? I think the majority of my, and I think TIGDA has a pretty good workforce as well, it's the number of hours they work, trying to get them to claim the hours they work. Rarely do I find that they're working on weekends anymore, which is good, but if the phone rings, some of them, because we have our own TIGDA phones, will answer it, and I'll say, why are you answering at 7 tonight? Well, why are you calling? Well, you're right, but I'll leave a message. I just wanted you to know that tomorrow morning I won't be in the office or something. So it's just learning to communicate and learn how are you going to work with your employees every day, whether you're in the office or in your home office.
And again, I think it's about providing continual educational pieces for your agency. One of the things that we do at the Patent and Trademark Office is that we have our own telework resource website. And I don't know, ladies, if... Yoo-hoo, ladies. Telework, there we go. If you can pull that up. This is actually located on the USPTO intranet. And there are all kinds of resources on there for managers and for employees. Our case studies are located on there. Our final reports from our pilots are there. News articles, recent current interviews that have been done with telework folks in the region. Our quarterly statistics are posted there. And I also have training resources for employees and for managers. And those resources served as the foundation for the facilitated discussions that I provided for the teleworkers and the managers. Now, please keep in mind that each of these trainings, again, just as telework at our agency is not a one-size-fits-all, nor are these trainings. Again, the bottom line is the same, but these trainings may have had to be tweaked or modified for a specific business unit, because business unit drivers certainly change from business unit to business unit. One thing I wanted to kind of piggyback on what Randy had said about, you know, you're able to get up and you know, if you can't reach a teleworker right away. I think educating managers and top execs, if they have never had the experience, it's baby steps. And you have to keep educating them. You can't just throw it out there and hope that they absorb it. It's incremental. My past CAO had never managed a teleworker, didn't know a whole lot about teleworking, so I really felt like I had a challenge ahead of me. And so I would, again, I designed this website so that she could go in and get her information. I would constantly give her articles. We would have the discussion. And then after I was at the agency for close to a year, it was time for me to actually start teleworking so she could sort of let me go and do that. And, you know, I made a point of, you know, making sure that she communicated with me on a regular and recurring basis. And things were going very well, and she had been asked to speak at an event at the press club. And she was asked about managing teleworkers, and she said, you know, I'm now a believer. She said, I love it when Danette Campbell teleworks because I can reach her right away. When she's at the Alexandria campus, she's up, she's at meetings, she's gone. When I stop at her office, she's never there. So again, it's baby steps and encourage. And once you have a believer, you know, you will have a believer for life.
I think we have another question in the back of the room, and then if we could move to the front of the room. Actually, we've got a lot of questions. But we'll...
Hi. I have two questions. Number one, are there certain occupational series that maybe there's a prejudice that they shouldn't be teleworking, like some of the customer base versus some of the more independent, like you talked about your patent attorneys who have this production environment where they're actually producing this real product, versus a perception that maybe service-oriented occupational series aren't going to do as well at teleworking. How do you dispel those types of myths? And then my second question is, what type of resources do you dedicate to actually survey and assess your teleworkers? I mean, is it a whole office that's completely dedicated to analyzing telework and surveys, et cetera?
I'll start with your last question first. The whole telework office at the Patent and Trademark Office is right here. This is the office of telework. Now, I do have some technical support from an outside consulting firm to help me electronically set up those surveys and analyze the results. Again, but they are not on site. In addition, telework at our agency truly is a group effort, and it does, in fact, take a village. I have incredible resources across the agency, and we have every business unit has a telework coordinator. Of course, they have, you know, 100 other duties, but they are also the telework point of contact for that particular business unit. On a quarterly basis, I have meetings with these telework coordinators agency-wide, and we talk about, again, current statistics, current trends, anything that's new and exciting that's going on in the agency. So, yes, in fact, it's really important for whomever is designing or developing the telework initiative to reach out to the entire agency and develop a working group. Especially, you know, with resources being as limited as they are now, I don't foresee that many agencies are going to have a telework office with staff of 15 or 20 folks. Now, to address your other question, certainly while the nature of patent and trademark work very easily lends itself to remote work, we do entertain all kinds of positions. And the way we approach this, again, it's business unit by business unit, but if an employee does research or provides reports or they can work independently in this particular job, then that's probably a telework eligible position. Now, again, an individual has to be at the agency a certain amount of time before we will deploy them to work from home. Telework at our agency is not yet a condition of employment. In addition, we have business units, the Trademark Assistance Center, that is basically a customer service-driven entity. We have those folks now working from home 3 days a week. What comes to mind initially, the positions that would not be telework eligible are, again, blatant ones, the security guard, the folks that work in the cafeteria, the electricians that keep the elevators running. But what we try to do is, especially for inclusion, say someone is a receptionist and maybe only 80% of his or her job has to do with that direct customer service face-to-face, we try to include that individual in the telework initiative. Maybe they can telework once a bi-week. But again, it's really about what the business unit drivers are and ensuring that the office is, in fact, covered.
We use a similar approach to determining who's eligible. Our function heads, audit investigations, mission support, the executives have the authority to designate which positions are eligible. We have certain storefront positions like you do, Danette, that require physical presence. People want to walk in and file a complaint. Somebody's got to be there to take the complaint. And certain aspects then is down to the nature of the person or how they do their job. So the executive designates the eligible positions. The managers themselves designate eligible employees. So you can get sort of dinged and not allowed to telework if your manager doesn't think that's going to be good for the agency. But beyond those that aren't eligible to telework, just example, some of our forensic people in the investigations, we have enabled their productivity by the mobility because everyone's afforded the same infrastructure that supports teleworkers, so they're not necessarily in the office. That's where the forensic equipment is, and they do the analysis, but when they go out to the sites and such, as well as the investigators and the technicians, they can work very productively. They don't have to rush back to the office to get the work done. They use the telework infrastructure to be very productive all the time.
We have another question here, and then
we'll go over here. I agree. The issue is not with teleworking. The issue is with the manager, the management style of the manager. Sometimes they're what we call old school. You have to be physically in the office. Our respond to such managers is, look at the President of the United States. He had cabinet secretaries. I don't know how many they are, 12, 15. Does he require them to work in the Oval Office? No. All of his managers' secretaries are hoteling, basically. They're hoteling. They're working away from the Oval Office, and their boss is the President of the United States. All federal employees is hoteling for Barack Obama. He's ultimately our boss. Do we all have to work in the Oval Office? No, we don't. See, the point is, it's how you manage people. In our agency, we have a 40-hour requirement for managers to take within 2 years, and one of them is telework. And we also have required telework training for employees before they can begin teleworking so they can know or understand the program of telework. So it's really more of a manager's management style than the telework program itself.
Good comment. We have a question over here, or comment. Comments are good, too.
No, it's a question. Joe, I believe you mentioned $1 million a year real estate savings. Could each of you talk a little bit about the impact of telework on facilities and real estate?
At the agency, we have been bringing on numerous patent examiners over the course of the past couple of years. And if we did not have a hoteling program where our seasoned examiners can work from home 4 days a week and relinquish that office space, we would have had to secure an entire building, probably have avoided the cost of securing about, maybe $9 million worth of real estate as a result of starting, a telework program that started with 18 examining attorneys has now grown to the point where, again, we are seeing this huge return on investment. And this is what I said a little bit earlier, you know, or actually I was in a conversation with the folks from education, and I believe they are here this morning somewhere in the audience. But, you know, we were talking about telework programs and that initial investment. It's not cheap, but you get what you pay for. And you really have to look big picture and long term. Because it is well worth the investment, which, again, we've seen from the agency.
We had moved into a new headquarters building in December of 2000 and almost immediately realized it was too small for us. We had three floors, and we were starting negotiations with the landlord to add a fourth floor when our telework program happened. And as we went down that path and the negotiations looked at it, we determined we didn't need the space. That saved us $750,000 just in headquarters alone going forward. 10-year lease expires in 2010. We're now doing our space study for the headquarters building, and we're going to lose at least another floor. And we've had similar results in Atlanta, which is our star in the area.
You know, he closed down my office. But we did move to a...
She didn't complain.
No, I didn't. I moved. Had to move a mile away. Like I said, we have two office buildings in Atlanta. One of the challenges we're having at the moment now is our staff is growing. I now have more managers in my program area with not an office. So one of my managers is using a conference office. One of our business units doesn't require that their manager has an office, whereas Office of Audit, where I work, we like our managers to have an office to keep their files. It may be a luxury that down the way we don't have, but we do need meeting rooms when we do come in. As I said, we come in the office one day a week. That's a TIGDA requirement. I find it very advantageous. We weren't doing it for years, I think. I think it's only been a couple years that policy has been in place. A lot of grumbling at first, but we do have enough hoteling spaces that if we're very careful, we can all come into the office one or two days a week to have lunch together, to just have FaceTime, and then the managers have their offices. So that's a little challenge to us, is to have a conference room, hoteling space, and some offices. Some of our work does require the auditors to be in their office every day for a number of weeks. It just depends on the audit work we're doing. So that is a challenge to the TIGDA executives trying to decide, particularly in Atlanta, because we have about six teams of auditors in Atlanta. And if they obviously can't come in on the same day, so you have to rotate. But if we do have to come in on the same day, you're in trouble. Like our IG came to Atlanta yesterday, and the question is, well, we all can't come in the office today. Some of the questions a manager has to think about is, if you have a meeting downtown, do your auditors come in and just work the whole day in the hoteling space, or do they have to take some of their work day to commute downtown for a meeting? And those are just some of the things that you have to work out. But again, if you're looking at results, that's where you're focusing.
I'd like to add, and actually, one of the fathers of our patent hoteling program is with us this morning. Larry, where are you? There he is, Larry Schwartz. When the patent hoteling program was first designed, it was addressed that I believe 10 examiners, no, the hoteling rooms were designed so that three examiners per unit would be served if they came back to work their one day a week. And again, the patents hoteling program has been in place for about 3 years now. We are finding, and we use a Deskplex, and we generate utilization results on a regular and recurring basis, and have found that these hoteling rooms are so poorly utilized, if you will, that we have increased the ratio to 10 examiners per hoteling space. And so that is giving us back, you know, even some more real estate. And you probably are wondering, well, you know, what do they do when they come back to campus? Well, let me just say they are so productive when they are working from home. They use their time in the office to, again, meet with colleagues, have lunch. They may check email, may check a couple of things, and then they turn around and go back home. They prefer working at home. They're more productive at home. But we do have a place for them in the event they want to come to the office and get some work done. Yes? Exactly. Exactly.
So,
and what agency are you with? Okay.
So we have a lady waiting over here, if you don't mind. So he said he had 14 to 18 people per cubicle. Is that? Go ahead, please.
Yes, I'd like to know what type of tools that you have to manage those office spaces. How are people signing up?
Are you talking about the hoteling spaces?
Yes, the communal spaces at the office that people share when they come into the office. Okay. What type of tools are available to help manage those?
Actually,
spaces?
As I said earlier, we use what's called Deskplex. And the examiner, the trademark examining attorney, can utilize this. It's an online tool to reserve space there at the agency. And then, again, I can pull these utilization statistics up on, you know, a regular basis and make the determination, you know, are we in fact going to relinquish some of those hoteling spaces and turn them into offices? It's a great tool. It's worked really well for us.
We use AgileQuest's solution. I think they call it Onboard. Mm-hmm. It's not an endorsement. It's just a statement of fact. AgileQuest, they're out of Richmond, Virginia.
Do you have another question or comment here?
House of Representatives, I'd like to, this is going to be a big shift, but during business continuity, disaster recovery, continuity of operations, and I'm thinking the scenario specifically being the anthrax case, 2001, 2002, do you have procedures for teleworkers that began as local on-site workers? And I remember Department of State and some buildings shut down, and normal workers became teleworkers, or others were left without without being able to cover their work. So I'm wondering if, do you expect these on-site workers to transition into off-site telecommuters?
Yes. One of the things that we find we use this more often than anything else, you know, is for weather. When we had the threat of the ice and storm, we just told everyone to take their laptops home and be prepared to work from home. So, yes, we have a very robust, and it addresses all sort of occurrences.
Currently, we have an enterprise-wide model that we use for standardization of equipment. Again, it's what we call the enterprise-wide remote access. It includes the laptop, the docking station, for teleworkers, whether they're one day a week or 4 days a week. Currently, we are entertaining, we're doing a pilot program with what we're calling the ERA portal. And that would be where people could use their own equipment and access a full desktop. Still, again, using a secure fob, et cetera. I would think that our agency would be able to utilize the ERA portal for folks who are not under a formalized telework program. Again, we're talking about in the future. We do have a COOP plan in place for current teleworkers, and I would think, and again, this is just my perception, that if we had a pandemic or a crisis tomorrow, certainly 4,000-plus people could continue to work. Those who do not have immediate access would not, in fact, be able to work. So,
we have the luxury of being a little smaller than PTO, yeah. And every one of our employees is telework enabled. So.
So then would you say you have the resources right now to cover 600 people that have to become teleworkers?
We have the resources to put 100% of our workforce in alternate locations, yes.
Thank you.
I think he said he works for the House of Representatives, so if you want to make a budget request, this should be.
Hi. I'd like to ask about union issues and whether there's negotiation issues with telework or, you know, if those kinds of things come up and how you resolve them.
Danette, do you want to?
We're non-bargaining.
That's a good one for you, Danette.
We have a very strong, very positive relationship with our unions. We have the NTEU 243 and 245. We also have the POPA union, which is the Patent Examiner Union. When all of these telework programs for patent and trademark examiners were designed, the union was at the table. And very heavily involved in the design and the development and certainly the implementation of these telework initiatives. And I don't know if that answers your question completely or if you would like to continue. Yes.
What if there's a snow day? Do teleworkers get the day off? How does that work?
No.
No, they don't. Okay.
No. Do teleworkers get the day off? No, the thing is, you know, certainly if you're scheduled to work from home and the government closes or there's a late opening or an early dismissal, you know, you as an individual do not have to bear the burden of that horrific commute. So you continue to work.
The point in the recently was the inauguration. Teleworkers were not authorized the inauguration day off.
And when we are, as the same, if for some reason the IRS closes, I think recently in Atlanta there was no electricity in some of our offices, our teleworkers continued to work. So we do have a phone tree set up, so in emergencies the phone tree is implemented. We have numbers we can call to find out, but you work like if it's an everyday. We're not union, but our policy is that you just continue to work as if it were every. Now, we do have times where our own DSL lines or our own electricity is out at our home, and so the question arises, what do you do? Well, we use our common sense with that. If you're not going to get your, you can use a modem, but, boy, that can be unreal slow nowadays. So just depending, the manager and the employee have to use their common sense and decide, does the employee go into work? And that's what we've had to do in a couple cases, but it's on a case-by-case basis.
Hi. And I think common sense is always the key, whether people are working on site or remote workers.
I have sort of a two-part question. I wanted to get a sense of what the initial impact was to your budget, and how you allocated resources to provide the additional phone lines or printers, and also whether you supplied BlackBerries to any of your employees who are working from home. And the second part, I just wanted to know, how do you keep track of the resources and whether there's any abuses to the home phone line, any long-distance calls, or excessive use of things like the printer or any other supplies?
I'll go first. The budget. We leveraged off of the Y2K money to give all our laptops, all of our employees laptops. So the basic infrastructure was paid for by other money. And it's not that much more expensive as we refresh going forward is just to keep buying laptops for everyone. And then cell phones is a case-by-case basis, whether it's a cell phone or BlackBerry. Again, it depends on your position. We had a budget for cell phones, and it's only a slight delta for the BlackBerries on that. We track it like we track our in-office telephone bills and such. It gets scrutiny just like everything else. We don't look at every bill, everything. We just, you know, have a nice audit plan where we pull those things and look at it. And it's very difficult to isolate what we consider telework, you know, costs. We reimburse employees 50% of their high-speed connectivity, so we can capture that number at about, you know, $50 a month. And we've seen that drop from, you know, close to $100 a month. So that's the one clear number we can track.
Insofar as planning our telework initiative, you know, our agency execs were really visionary when it came to thinking long-term about what telework, what it could do for the agency, how it could be a business strategy. And with that being said, you know, we have to hire large numbers of patent examiners on a regular basis. And the agency realized that telework, you know, certainly was a recruiting tool. It's a tool for retention, and that it would enable the agency to continue to hire more patent examiners without securing additional real estate. So with all of that being said, when this initiative started to come into light, all of the telework funding is incorporated into every business unit budget. As I said earlier, we have a standard model for equipment deployment. It's the enterprise remote access model, again, laptop, docking station. Our examiners get two monitors. And I wanted to point out that we do, again, have the voice over IP, so we are not tracking telephone credit cards, that sort of thing. And it makes our program certainly more seamless to the outside client.
So can I get a show of hands just how many questions we have left, because we're starting to run low on time, and I see, a lot. So let's, do you have one right there? We'll try to get to as many as we can, but we'll probably only be able to do about two or three more.
Hi, I was wondering about your perspective on other agencies that are maybe slower to adopt telework and the broader scale, and do you have a perspective on what are the major issues that they're dealing with? You know, is it sort of lack of executive support? Is it,
yes,
you know, government? You know, I mean, are there major themes that you think are going on, or is it just kind of the barriers are just across the board? You know what I'm saying?
So Joe, do you want to take, or go ahead?
You know, what I would like to say, yes, in fact, it is a top-level issue. Again, at the agency, we've had incredible support from our director. But again, as I mentioned, you know, in my opening comments, it's really important for top-tier management to see the return on investment model, all of the things that I listed earlier. If you can make a business case and present it in an articulate fashion, and then conduct pilot programs and start small and show small successes, I think that will be helpful. But also, take a look at those folks that are in management positions. I think a lot of management work needs to be done. That has to be fixed before an appropriate, an accurate, productive telework initiative can be launched. And also, I believe now in most federal agencies that the telework point of contact is normally housed in the Office of Human Resources, where that individual has not only telework, but benefits, but work life, and on and on and on. I think until agencies realize the magnitude of conducting a full-blown telework program, until they realize how important it is to have either an office or one individual who is tasked with all of the telework at the agency, I think you're going to continue to get the kind of product that you're getting now. I don't think these folks really do have the time or the energy, perhaps, to take on the entire agency and actually be developing or designing business unit specific initiatives. And that's what it takes. Again, as I said earlier, telework at agency should not be a one size fits all program.
Joe? Well, just to hit the key points is you have to have executive support. We sold ours through a well designed pilot It can't be too limited because the significance can be sort of scoffed at. So pilot and prove it, and then change the culture. We had a false start, and we had to pull all the managers together and say this is a good thing, and then put it in their performance plans.
So I think I've seen at least three more questions to come out. If not, let's try and do a little speed round. So if you could ask the question, if there's someone specifically you want to direct it to, that would be appreciated, and we'll try to keep things on time.
Okay.
So we've got a gentleman here, and I see you there, and someone over here, and I think that's it. So we'll do those three and then finish.
Can you speak to the consideration about information security and how you've addressed it with the home office communicating back to the main office?
We've utilized a virtual private network solution for the communications piece. We encrypt our hard drives. We will certainly shortly be encrypting our removable thumb drives and such as that. So the only risk, as it always has been, is careless employees. If they print something out and they don't put it in the locking file cabinet and some kid does homework on it and takes it into school or something.
Go ahead, Danette.
Again, I echo what Joe just said. Everything is encrypted. We are encrypting thumb drives as well. We have very specific policies in place for security. And again, all of that information is on our telework resource website. We address it in training with managers. We address it in training with employees.
Okay. Take this lady here. Thank you.
Good morning. This question is directed toward the TIGDA representatives. Are your telework programs more relegated to your senior and experienced auditors, or do you allow your new recruits also to participate?
We have a policy that any new hires in the audit, they don't telecommute full-time for the first 6 months to a year. I'm not sure how many days they do telecommute. I think 2 to 3, depending on who's coming in the office at that time. After you have done your 6 months or a year, then you telecommute full-time or whatever the choice is.
Okay, so we'll do two more questions. This lady here, and then we'll get to you to finish up. Okay.
Like to be addressed by each of the three of you. I know that we have talked a lot about job satisfaction, work-life balances, and all of this sound really great. Have you had an opportunity to do some type of an assessment to determine whether or not you have had a decrease in workplace conflicts that rise to the level of grievances or EEO issues?
I really can't speak to that.
Just our numbers have decreased in that area, and I haven't thought to attribute it to telework. But, yes, our numbers have gone down. I credited our EEO officer for having done that. So I'll have to look behind the numbers now.
Okay. Gentleman here.
Good morning. I would like to have a follow-up on a question asked earlier about eligibility for participating in the telework program. Mm-hmm. Before the question was directly related to position classification, in the federal government, there is a lot of evaluation systems. Some of them are five level, five tier. Some of them are merely pass-fail. I was on the Frank Wolf, Representative Wolf. He speaks often on the teleworks benefits, and he always talks about to the maximum extent feasible. So I'm wondering, and I haven't heard anybody mention it here yet, if there's eligibility requirements directly tied into the performance evaluations that federal workers receive on an annual basis.
Not by policy. It's, again, we invest the authority with the managers to determine whether someone can telework or not. And it just boils down to the fact if they're performing in a virtual environment. And if they're not, then they're asked to work in a traditional environment. And more often than not, they can't work in a virtual environment. They really can't work anywhere, and we sort of manage them out.
Again, from a patent and a trademark perspective, it is so clearly defined as to when an employee is actually eligible to telework. The corporate business units are a little bit different. One of the issues that confronts some of these business units is office coverage because they are customer service driven. But what we try to do, again, I think I mentioned this earlier, is to take, to revisit those positions. Every year we we do a revised eligibility list from every business unit to try to open telework up to more positions.
Randy, did you?
I'll just address the performance issue. Is that what you were alluding to? Okay. Of the employees we have, I have had performance issues in the past, and again, I don't think they were related directly to the virtual, but it is a privilege to telecommute, and the managers have used that. Usually what the manager will do is if there's a performance problem, the employee is limited onto the number of days they can telecommute, and to help them get back up to the speed where they are, they obviously need, or we have thought they needed, some more interaction and more close supervision, which required them to be in the office. So, I think the telecommuting is one reason we haven't had to do that, is because they see it as a privilege and they don't want to have to come in and work with that manager in the office.
And can I add, I don't think I completely addressed your question. Again, every employee, whether patent or trademark or corporate, must maintain a rating of fully successful. Again, on the patent and trademark side, it's metrics driven. It's all about the numbers. From the corporate business side, you know, we are trying to work with our managers to ensure that those performance measures and what equates to a fully successful is very clearly defined, again, before someone goes out. So it's about being fully successful, again, regardless of where they're working. You're welcome.
Great. So before we adjourn, I'd like to make a plug for the next session. I'd also like to give each panelist an opportunity for a parting shot. If you can do like a 15-20 second, just quick, as an early adopter, what is the one thing you would recommend people think about, take away? We're kind of tight on time, but I'll give you 30 seconds to think about it to promote the next session, which we've actually talked a lot today about, you know, organizational challenges, management challenges, policy challenges to become an adopter of telework. But a lot of what's enabling this is technology and really the capabilities that technology bring to enable a telework environment. If you would like to learn more about that, in this next panel, I know we have some folks who are going to talk about it, including Bobby Cadell from Adobe, and you can learn about some of the really kind of cool science fiction-like technologies that can be used to make all this possible. So is that enough time to kind of do a quick parting shot?
Yeah, real quick. Again, telework programs should not be one size fits all. Have a substantial telework policy in place, but make sure that business unit guidelines are designed and developed to meet the needs of the business unit. Put together a telework team for your agency to include your OCIO, your OHR folks, any folks from public affairs that you may need, any kind of IT support that's available to you, take advantage of that. Make sure that you have a return on investment model in place and revisit that from year to year. And also take a look at your eligibility list on an annual basis.
Okay. Joe.
It's all about change management. There's lots of models for going about change management. There's one thing to remember about change management. It's communications.
And I'll just reiterate that because, again, from a management point of view, managing inside a home environment should be really no different. You just communicate differently. And how managers, when first starting telecommuting, I think do need to set up a process on how their team is going to communicate with each other, whether it be through email, instant messages, the phone, or their own little SharePoint or Internet site.
Okay, so we're going to break until 10:15, but before we do, can we please give a round of applause and thank our panelists?
Thank you very much.
10:15.